Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a championship-winning edition of the Gegenpod as former Premier League stars Mark Schwarzer, Thomas Sorensen and Michael Bridges ascend the podium and talk about Manchester City winning the Premier League title. We've got the relegation battle to discuss, some serious issues in La Liga, and we'll hit the Championship and WSL as well. I'm your host, Teo Pelizzeri. This is the Optus Sport Football Podcast. Let's get in to the Gegenpod. Yes, it is a Gegenpod ready to lift some trophies, exactly like Manchester City did at the weekend. We welcome back Thomas Sorensen. Hello.
Good morning. Yes, happy with Man City winning the trophy.
Michael Bridges, welcome back.
Thank you very much, and I'm just as happy as Thomas because Arsenal didn't win it. Hey!
And a man who's been at the venue and been a first-hand part of a Premier League celebration during his career, Mark Schwarzer. Does a weekend like the one just gone bring back happy memories for you, or do you feel a little bit removed from your own playing days when you watched Man City lift the trophy at the Etihad Stadium?
A little bit different. My experiences were as a squad player, not as a mainstay player. So my experiences of being part of that trophy thing is very, very different. I do enjoy watching it. I see and know how much it means. Been there a long, long time, but you know, as a player, what it would have meant to win the Premier League is pretty impressive. And I have to say, I thought Bridges in pretty good spirits considering Spurs are absolutely crap.
He'll be bagging Newcastle all the way now. You know, he's forgotten about Leeds. It's all about Newcastle.
Well, we can't move off Manchester City that quickly. We will loop back to it, Bridgie, don't you worry. But let's talk about Manchester City. The game itself against Chelsea needs no analysis because they were indeed able to win the championship without kicking a ball thanks to Arsenal losing to Nottingham Forest. So let's talk about the entire journey to this point of the season for Manchester City. They've been crowned champions, great champions, dropping very few points along the way and playing some great football. Mark Schwarzer, how will you remember this season's edition of Manchester City in the Premier League? Let's put the chase for the treble to one side and just focus on what they did in the league itself.
I think what they did this season was, whether it was intentional or not, probably wasn't intentional, but they've timed their run to perfection, considering how few days they were at the top of the table. And they've been there when it counts. I think what Arsenal, 240 odd days at the top of the table, and not have won the Premier League title, which obviously must be incredibly disheartening for them. But for Manchester City, there was always that thought that if they go on a run, they could really cause some damage, and were always Arsenal's major threat.
Yeah, I totally agree, Schwarzy. I think you know what Man City have shown is off the charts. On the clutch meter, I think it shows that experience counts in football. You know, if you've been there before, you can do it again. And I think that's been the problem for Arsenal. A couple of injuries, Saliba, I think, was a massive miss in the run-in. You know, I think all the statistics show that since he went down with his back injury, it's been a real problem. Yeah, Man City, 14 games unbeaten. You know, it speaks for itself. I think they've overall been the best team. Arsenal, you know, have done well and have really improved, but they still have that final step to take, and that's what Man City have done.
I was going to say what Thomas is saying there. I don't think Manchester City were the better team throughout the season. They always stayed in contention. They just grew and got better and better. I think at times Arsenal actually probably played some better football. There was a period of time where Manchester City actually looked like they were struggling a little bit. But they came good, and they came good at the right time, and they always stayed in contention. Even if it was 8 points, you always felt that Manchester City had it in the bag, or had the potential to pull them in and to win it, and they showed it.
And I think that's what Tommy's saying there. That comes with experience. and knowledge of winning it before and knowing what it takes. I think the, you know, Arsenal have been magnificent. They've, you know, to overachieve this season and to think the, you know, how young the squad has been and what they have done with, especially with Odegaard as a captain, you've got to credit what Arsenal have done. But then again, I just feel the inexperience of not being able to get over the line. I went through to Leeds United, you know, Teo, when we were top of the league at Christmas in the 99-2000 season. We had Man United chasing us and Arsenal, both teams that had won the Premier League before. And we had a very, very young team, very reminiscent of this Arsenal squad. And we just fell by the wayside, mate. And we again got pipped by Manchester United and Arsenal and ended up finishing third. And I think when I looked at that team, we only had one person that had won the Premier League. That was David Batty with Blackburn Rovers. Whereas Man City, this calibre of player, these players, they've won it before and they knew what it was going to take to get over the line.
So that's the positive about Manchester City, and it feels as though there's not a huge amount left to say on that front. But it would be remiss of us not to flag that they do have these charges from the Premier League that need to be addressed around the financial dealings of the club, a laundry list as long as your arm, and it is lawyers at 10 paces at the moment, and no doubt is going to drag on for a while yet. Thomas, does this loom and hang over Manchester City's win, regardless of what asterisks might end up in the history books or what might be determined in backroom dealings between now and the end of this saga? They've been on the podium and they've lifted the trophy. They've had that moment with their fans. So they've won, but is this something that we are going to look back on as potentially tarnished in the future?
I think here you're looking at two aspects. You're looking at the playing squad, the players, and what they have achieved on the pitch. And I don't think we can take anything away from that. You know, but the club has potentially, you know, not done things by the book. And that has to be dealt with. So, you know, for me, you know, I think time will tell, you know, if it's going to be tainted. You know, we're looking at allegations with Barcelona as well. You know, there's things floating around in football in general that needs to be dealt with. And if Man City has, you know, it will obviously tarnish the club, I think. But we've seen with, you know, with other clubs that have spent big, it's not a guarantee of success. For me, I think what Guardiola has done with the players, it's still a massive achievement no matter what. And for me, they've all, you would presume, been in good faith. You know, I don't think the players obviously know about what's going on behind the scenes. I don't, you know, I would think that Guardiola as well, which he has stated, doesn't know about what, you know, the directors are doing and what the, you know, what goes on in Abu Dhabi. You know, so we'll see. So for me, you know, it's still a fantastic achievement and a historical season no matter what.
You're right in saying that you still have to put the team together, you still have to manage the squad, and you still have to be able to perform like they have, right? And that is impressive. There's no going away from that whatsoever. The question mark, I suppose, is if they've broken the rules, which has enabled them to put the squad of the type of caliber that they have together to be able to do what they've done, then of course there are rules then possibly broken, right? So then they will need to be punished accordingly. But yeah, taking away, you can't take away from the fact that the way they've played, the question is if they've broken rules, they probably would never have been able to build the squad that they've got and the team they've got to do what they've done.
Yeah, but every manager and every fan of their rival clubs have got to be so upset that there's been no clarity and no answers or some kind of indication given thus far. Because, you know, the Champions League came down on Manchester City. With obviously, that's why the fans are always booing the Champions League anthem. And then that was overturned. And now this thing in the Premier League has gone on for a long, long time. So, you know, if I'm thinking of Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool missing out by 1 point, and that could have been punished and sanctioned, when are we going to get answers? And how long is it going to take the Premier League to come out and you know, governing bodies to say that they have broke the rules? There's got to be something, because the rival clubs will be burning to see how long it is going to go on for. And, you know, winning four trophies in the last 5 years... suggests that, like you say, the players and the management have been incredible. But you've just said it, Swarty, if they have broke financial fair play rules, that is deemed as cheating and breaking the rules. And, it's going to be so interesting to see what does happen to Manchester City. But you've got to take into consideration all them other fans and the managers that think Manchester City have broken the rules, because they will be fuming. And they've got every right to be if that's the case.
My next question is, regardless of the outcome of this Manchester City case, do we think that financial fair play rules and the structure that's currently in place serves its purpose. Part of me does, and I'm not a Manchester City fan, I will freely admit, but part of me does have comfort with the idea of an uncapped, unrestricted environment, and if owners want to spend and blow up the market, they can. And if it means that the club rises and falls, has to become a Phoenix club, has to go bankrupt and start over when the party ends, so be it. I mean, I know that's a little bit chaotic, and maybe the fans that would have to endure such an experience wouldn't necessarily think that the ends justify the means. But I actually don't mind the idea of taking the handbrake off completely and having no restrictions on how much you can pay for players, transfer fees, wages, staff, whatever. And if that creates an imbalance, but people still gravitate towards greatness and they still gravitate towards teams that win more often than not. Am I barking up the wrong tree, Mark? Is the appetite there for competitive measures and for fairness? Or do you think that there is a counterbalance of enough of a desire to just see the best be the best, regardless of how they come to be the best?
I think it's important to have... You're never going to have total equality because of the fact that some clubs are just so much bigger, are starting from a far better start point than others, have had... you know, tens of 20s or 30s of years of or hundreds of years of actually establishing themselves and creating the foundation. But I am for having some restraints, because otherwise then it just becomes a matter of who has the most money and how much money they're going to throw it at. And I think as long as those people stay interested in the game, it works okay. But after, if they decide they get bored with it, they decide they want out, they walk away and the club crumbles, and then there's people's livelihoods at stake. And I'm not talking about footballers generally, because most of them earn a lot of money anyway. I'm talking about the people associated with football clubs. They destroy people's lives. I don't think there should be unrestricted. I think there needs to be controls in place. Yeah. I wouldn't want to see it going crazy, out of all control. I want to see clubs brought under a little bit more restraint, a bit more control. And I want to see fairness. I want to see competitiveness. I don't want to have a league where a team wins it 10 years in a row, like, for example, Bayern Munich's been doing. It doesn't look like they're going to do this year, thank goodness, in so many ways. I'm afraid that would happen. There will only be two or three clubs that potentially could maybe win the Premier League. I don't want to see that. I want to see what Leicester did. I want to see what, you know, Arsenal almost did. You know, I want to see clubs that can still do it and do it the right way.
Yes, I hear you, Swartzy. I love your answer, mate, because like Teo's saying, you know, if you can go and spend all that money, and people can go and wishy-washy. The top clubs, like your top European teams, are always going to find some big business owner and backer that is going to take them on because of the clout that these clubs have around the world with merchandise, sponsorships and branding. The problem becomes in the lower end of the Football League when somebody decides they want to have a throw of the dice and get a club, and they become the big, you know, the big person in that town and in that region, throw everything at it, and then all of a sudden realise that it's just a toy, and they throw it out the pram, and then they're done with it. And like that club could go into obliteration, and there's no coming back from that. And that's what it's there to protect. And I think, what Swartzy said is absolutely bang on.
You know, Theo, then we might as well go back to the discussion of a Super League. Like,
yes.
Are we then, you know, we might as well say, you know, Man City, whatever, the top four teams in England, the top four... and they can go and have their league and they can spend whatever. It's a free-for-all, you know, buy the best players. And then, but where does that leave everyone else? You know, because I agree with Swartzy. You know, what really interests us is the competitiveness. You know, we need a league. We need to believe that Man City can be overthrown. We need to believe that, you know, somebody can catch Arsenal. Now, if that's not a question, then, like, who cares then? So, you know, it's a... you know, it's a very, very sensitive question, I feel, and I like the restrictions to some extent.
The most intriguing thing about that conversation there, Teo, sorry to interrupt, the most interesting thing was that first time we've ever all agreed with Swartzy's answer. That's incredible, man. It's taken a whole
Thanks,
season.
Guys.
Well, let's talk about where it is very competitive, and that is the relegation battle, because we head into the final day of the season with three teams trying to avoid two places. Everton has the upper hand. They're on 33 points. Leicester on 31. Leeds on 31. Leeds have the worst goal difference out of the three. And then we'll get to the matches as they take place. All, of course, simultaneous kickoffs at the same time. Everton are at home to Bournemouth. Leeds are at home to Tottenham Hotspur. And Leicester City are at home to West Ham. So two fan bases are going to be in tears watching their team go down at home. Scenes like that are some of the most dramatic you can get in the Premier League. Who wants first crack at talking us through their thoughts on where the relegation battle stands? Bridgie, I've seen your hand go over your face. I think that means we need to start with you.
Yeah, cheers, T. I thought you'd go there. I mean, it's going to be horrendous. Me and Thomas have been involved in relegation battles. I'm not sure Swarty has. You know, we were Sunderland at the time. It's never easy. It's never nice, and it's so unpredictable on the final day of the season when it does go down to the wire. And like you say, these, you know, the teams, you'd much rather be in a situation like Everton, who are sitting above the relegation zone, knowing that they can, you know, you've got some breathing space. And I just feel like Leeds United have definitely got a chance because Tottenham have lost two matches back-to-back. You don't know where Tottenham Hotspur are at this moment in time. The players' minds are elsewhere. The club is in total disarray. So that game is definitely winnable. But you've got to then rely on other results. And Leicester City, the other night against Newcastle, I thought defensively, having Harry Suter back in the team, they played a back five. Defensively, it's the most organised I've seen them this season. So they can definitely pull something out against West Ham because they're looking at the final in Europe. So they may rest some players or they might have their heads elsewhere. And then you look at Everton against Bournemouth. Bournemouth are safe. He's done a great job there to keep them up. And Everton are above the relegation zone. So I really can't call this. I don't know which way it's going to go. And obviously being part of Leeds United's history and being with the club through thick and thin this season, I don't want it to be them. But I just feel the decision was made a little bit too late in bringing in Sam Allardyce because after speaking to the staff and the players around the club, at this moment in time, they've absolutely loved the environment since Sam Allardyce, Robbie Keane and Carl Robinson have come. They said it's felt so refreshing. And sadly, I just think it's been a little bit too late in coming because you need that kind of environment where everybody is on the same page and getting together. And I think it's just been so disjointed previously before these have come in with the arrival of Gratia. And I think it's just that it's too far gone. But I'm hoping that last final day, miracles do happen. There is still a chance. So I've got my fingers crossed that it will be Leeds United that survive.
Come on, Bridgie. I can't see that happening. For me, match point, Everton, they have to win against Bournemouth. I think you're playing at home, Goodison Park. The atmosphere there is going to be electric. You know, there has to be a difference in desire, in want to win it. Just from that perspective, having a 2-point cushion, it has to feel good as an Everton player going into that game, even though you know things can happen. But yeah, I can't see either Leicester or Leeds surviving. It's all Everton for me.
Yeah, definitely. Everton, obviously. Yeah, I agree, Thomas. Match point. They are serving for the match as well. Not even just match point. Receiving, they are serving for the match. And if they blow up from here, they've only got themselves to blame because they've got themselves in a position where I thought a couple of weeks ago Everton had no chance of getting into the position they're in now. The only thing I'd say is at home, they haven't been particularly great of late. I mean, they've really struggled. I mean, you go back to the 3rd of April was the last time they actually even got a point at home. And that was against your team, Bridgie, one of your many teams, Spurs, 1-1. Other than that, they've had some bad results. But I still think they'll have enough. And then the only team I see as a glimmer of hope is Leicester. Leicester is the one because of their goal difference. I think Leicester will win at home to West Ham. I also think Leeds will beat Spurs. I really do. But obviously it will be all in vain, and I think Everton will stay out.
Bridgie, you spoke about your experience at Sunderland. Thomas, you can speak to this too if you wish. relegation battles and the pressure of playing in front of your own fan base, is this the weekend where you almost need the fans to collectively wipe the slate clean and just come and cheer, you know, like go back to their childhood and refind the passion for the team rather than bring all the baggage and all the sort of experience disappointment of the season and all the negativity in, you know? It just feels as though Everton would almost go to Goodison Park expecting that this is one last chance for this team to screw up and disappoint us. Do they need to actually have memories of a goldfish here and come along and cheer like it's the first day of the season with a renewed optimism?
Yeah, no, you know, the last game of the season, I think, you know, I experienced that Sunderland. It was a little bit different because we had gone on a horrendous run and we had been relegated for you know, a couple of weeks. And it was my last game for Sunderland as well. So it was a little bit bittersweet, a lot of disappointment and a lot of embarrassment. I think we all felt, you know, pretty horrible. But then for me as well, it was, you know, I also had to sort of take it in and say goodbye to the fans. And it was a weird, weird feeling. And it's horrible because you see it in, you know, you look out into the stands, you see these fans who wear the, you know, the emotions on the sleeve and you know, they fight for the badge and that's their life. And you can just see their eyes are empty and tears and it's horrible, you know, and that's the emotions of football. And it's totally different from being, you know, we're talking about Bournemouth. I've been in that mid-table situation where you're looking at the last game of the season, you know, you want to finish well, but as soon as that game is finished, you sort of, okay, now it's family time. We're off on our holidays, you know, forget about next year, you know, let's enjoy it. But you can't when you're in that relegation battle. You know, it lingers with you after. And it's something that you'd be reminded of. And yeah, it's a horrible situation.
Yeah, I mean, we got relegated at different times. I got relegated in the season when Coventry delayed their kickoff and we were playing Wimbledon to get a result. And that was a really tough one to watch. I was so young and seeing it unfold and being part of a club, being excited to be a Premier League footballer at such a young age and then realising the reality that it wasn't going to be for the following season. And it was really strange to think at that time what players were going to be there next season as well. Was I going to be part of this? Was the manager going to be there? And it was a very, very worrying time, not just for myself as a player. But like Thomas has said, all them people that work at these football clubs that have been there for years and years, they're the DNA of these clubs. You're doing something that they would love to do, and that is just to step out onto the field of, you know, at Roker Park at the time. And you feel like you have let everybody down that is connected with the football club. And you just hope that you see them at the start of the following season. So again, all these players and the staff that are going through this situation at the moment, it's not easy. And the fans will turn up. There's no doubt about it. They will turn up and sing their hearts out at all three clubs. And then when you let the frustration out, it's normally after the final whistle. But there's no doubt there'll be any animosity, I wouldn't have thought, at Goodison Park, Elland Road, or Leicester City. Definitely not at the King Power. So it's going to be a fascinating final day.
Now, the points tally is of interest as well, because Everton on 33, Leicester and Leeds on 31. The record to avoid relegation is West Brom with 34 back in the 2003-04 season. So if Everton were to draw or lose, then we're either going to see that record equaled or broken, the lowest ever points tally. I guess it really means that no one can feel hard done by, Thomas. If you're getting relegated in a season where the lowest points tally to survive relegation is in your division, it's obvious you had your chances and really can't claim, regardless of what happens, refereeing decisions or, you know, hitting the crossbar or slices of bad luck, VAR intervention on the final day. No one can really genuinely claim they're hard done by, can they?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think the table, as we say always, is a cliche, but the table doesn't lie, really. And, you know, you look at all the three clubs, you know, they've all had issues, you know, behind the scenes, on the pitch. You know, they've changed managers. You know, they've tried to obviously, you know, create a spark, you know, trying to turn the corner. And it hasn't really happened. It's sort of been, you know, very inconsistent, like consistently bad all season for all the clubs. And yeah, you know, I think they'll have a lot of soul searching to do. And, you know, a lot of things will change at the two clubs they'll go down. You know, I think Bridget touched on it with our experience at Sunderland. You know, there'll be staff, there'll be cuts. You know, there's already talks about, you know, who's going to leave. And that's just the natural progression of being relegated. And that's why it's so tough. And because, you know, it's a long road back and there's no guarantees. We see Watford, Norwich, you know, we've seen, you know, with Stoke City that I was part of, you know, there's no guarantees you'll ever be back.
We'll leave relegation there and turn our focus to the top four. Manchester United at home to Chelsea on Friday morning here in Australia can potentially lock everything in before the final day. Mark Schwarzer, do you think it is as simple as Manchester United will take care of business, or do you think they could leave the door ajar to just have the Champions League battle go for one last round of the season?
I don't think so. I think Man United will get the job done on Thursday. I think Chelsea are just so far off it, aren't they? I mean, it's kind of like dead man walking, isn't it? It's just like they're almost. I feel for Frank. He took the job, obviously. You know, I feel for him because what do you do? What are you trying to do? I mean, I think he's managing for his future, and that obviously hasn't gone well for him at Chelsea. The players just look. I don't know. They look disinterested. No one really knows what they're doing. I have to say, it looks pretty shambolic still at Chelsea. So I just see Man United. If Man United don't get the job done against Chelsea, they will be kicking themselves, because it's a game that they should win and should win comfortably.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong, Swarty, because I wouldn't mind seeing it go down to the final day of the season. I'd like to see Chelsea get something here, and then again, still have this top four for the Champions League spot between Manchester United and Liverpool going to the final day. But unfortunately, the situation that Chelsea are in, the way they've been playing as total individuals with no direction, and if Frank Lampard's doing an audition for another managerial job, well, it's probably the worst audition that we've ever seen in football and history, sadly. You know, he's gone back as a club legend, and it's just totally gone against him, unfortunately. But the damage is already done prior to that. So I think Chelsea may get something out of this. I might have one last final say in a really dismal season, which I feel for all the fans of the Premier League. Hopefully there's something still to watch on the final day for that battle between two very, very historic football clubs.
Yeah, but if we go in and say, like, if Man United can't get 4 points out of these last two games, they got Fulham at home in the last one. You know, we talk about Everton having a match point. So has Man United. So I think they'll get it done. I can't see it being a question, really, and I think it'll be done by Friday.
Well, one team that's already secured its spot in the top four is Newcastle United. Michael Bridges, this will obviously delight you because it means that a summer of spending might be in the offing. As much as Eddie Howe has been able to improve the players he inherited at Newcastle United, surely the carrot of Champions League means that the director of football might be handed a list of targets to go and bid for and negotiate with. Bridgie, be realistic. Who's top of your wish list for Newcastle United in the off-season?
Hang on, Tio. Before I give you the wish list, mate, let's just have me moment of glory here and just, like, say, lads, eat humble pie. All you people, listen, I love the Gagan Pod listeners, but all the ones that give me grief on social media and laughed me off at the start of the season when I predicted this, Mark Schwarzer included, there you go. Pie in the sky, humble it, eat it, take it and enjoy it, right? Because I saw this coming. There was a wave of something happening under Eddie Howe in Newcastle United Football Club, and they got the job done. So, like you say, getting back to your question, Theo, it has been that occasion the other night, the atmosphere was crazy before the game. There was a vibe around the city. The game itself, you know, Leicester came with a game plan and saw it out. And then after the game, it was just the realization had hit the players, especially one of the local boys, Dan Burney, he was just mesmerized. So you think now the pulling power that Newcastle United have had, not only are they a team that's on the up, that have got the power of money, they've spent it very, very wisely. They're doing things the right way behind the scenes, getting more staff. I know the staff behind the scenes is going to go through the roof with the employment because they need more numbers now to take on the workload that's going to come with that regarding sponsorship and the media attention. So that's great for Newcastle and the region. But as the person that makes the decisions, as you say, to get signings, It is so much easier to be able to go to a player and say, will you come to this football club to play Champions League football? And I was looking at the game a few weeks back when they played Southampton, and to think that a player like Ward-Prowse was on the radar for Newcastle United, and it would be an easy target to go and get somebody like him now, Southampton are going down. He's off the shopping list now. There's no chance. They're talking about people like Brozovic. You're looking at people like Juve, you know, Juventus players, Vlahovic, with the points deduction that they've just had as well. There's players available that I want to come and play, and it would be an easier move to get a black and white shirt from Juve into Newcastle. So your clientele list has gone through the roof. And I remember thinking about being at Leeds United when we signed Rio Ferdinand when we got in the Champions League. And that was an incredible move that, you know, when I was like, wow, that's blindsided all the players that were here to see Leeds sign that with the Champions League money that came in. So it's going to be a very, very interesting summer, and there's going to be some very big names. And, you know, the names I've hearing is Madison, and Brozovic is a big name as well that's getting branded about.
How do you feel about the balance of bringing in players from outside the Premier League that might need to prove themselves in England versus experienced Premier League players? But as you mentioned, you know, James Maddison may be someone who hasn't played Champions League, because other names being thrown around are Mohamed Kudus from Ajax or Dominik Szoboszlai from RB Leipzig. So these are players that have played in the Champions League and have proven themselves. But could there be a bit of a risk about acclimatising to the Premier League that might be an issue for them?
Well, it always is, no doubt about it. You need to settle in. I think you will never know until you try it. It's as simple as that. Some find their feet very easily and some don't. You know, Nunez of Liverpool, he's found it very, very hard to adapt so far. Haaland has literally come in and just taken it by storm. So you just never know how you are going to adapt to them circumstances. And the Ajax player that you've mentioned, heavily, heavily, big talk around him coming and being wanted. And now they have the money and the clout to do it, because that's what they're after. They're after somebody that can create in that attacking final third. Like I say, there's just so many names getting branded about, and Eddie Howe and the club have got the power to do that now. So the fans up here are so excited. One person I would like to see, and I'm going to wind Swarty up here, Harry Kane's available. That would be a big one.
Bridget, I would actually like to ask you, so like, what strategy? You talk about all these names, you talk about big name players. You know, Well, Bridget, what kind of strategy do you really want Newcastle to take? Do you want them to take the longer term? You know, you can look at, you know, younger up and coming players. You know, I heard great things about Kefren Turam from Nice. Kasper Schmeichel raves about him. You know, he's a young player. You got Moussa Diaby from Leverkusen, who's done really well. Or do you try to pick? You know, they're looking for left back potentially. Are you going to Barcelona because they have to sell? And are you looking at like a Jordi Alba? You know, are you looking for, you know, Rafinha, who's potentially available? You know, what kind of strategy? Do you want big names like, you know, do you want them to go the Arsenal route, or do you want them to take the Chelsea route and just splash the cash for big names?
No chance, Tommy. And I don't think the club would allow that to happen. No, Dan Ashworth's coming from Brighton. He's got a, he actually said it himself on the a big radio station over here that he's got a no dickhead policy. And that's what Eddie Howe has also got. They don't want to deal with egos where it's going to cause conflict. What they've created is a culture at Newcastle United with the players and the staff and everybody involved with the club, and they've done it in a slow process, and I don't think that you will see that change. They're not going to go and go absolutely gangbuster. They're going to have a plan strategically where they will buy players that are young and for the future, like Anthony Gordon, and they will then go and have a dip into somebody, I think, that has got Champions League experience that can spread that knowledge. But again, it looks like, you know, the players now that Bruno Guimaraes has had talks that if Newcastle didn't get in the Champions League, that he was going to get snapped up. Well, no, he's got chance of playing Champions League football now. So you've also got that, you know, excitement of players that are going to want to stay to see out and be at Newcastle United. So I'd like to see there's still the slow approach, Tommy, and the strategic approach, which is what has always been Newcastle's vision and philosophy since this takeover happened.
What about a Sadio Mane or a Joao Cancelo? I mean, it looks like Cancelo's not going to be at Man City. They look like they want him out. And what about Sadio Mane? Would you go for someone like him, considering also the problems that he's caused supposedly at Bayern Munich with Leroy Sané?
Yeah, another great question, Swarty. Because like you say, I've just mentioned the policy that Dan Ashworth mentioned. Mane has had a bit of conflict at Liverpool with Mo Salah. There was that conflict. Then you go and see what he's done with Sarney and cause a conflict there. So I think that is a player that the fans would absolutely love to see at St. James's Park because he's exciting. But I think it's a one that you might as well say, well, there's a little cross about it because of the culture that he's created at a few clubs. I don't think Newcastle would stand by that. They would don't want the dressing room disrupted.
Well, certainly you'll be able to follow all the transfer rumours and machinations on Optus Sports socials over the course of the off-season. It's going to be a huge one. All right, you're listening to the Gegen Pod. We have La Liga, women's football, and a mixed bag, including the championship playoff and some Socceroos news coming up after this short break.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the Gegen Pod. We've got Michael Bridges, Thomas Sorensen, and Mark Schwarzer with us for this episode. And we need to talk about La Liga because the fallout from Vinicius Jr.'s racial abuse from the Valencia fans at the weekend continues. An incredible video going through the headlines from Phil Kitromalidis for Optus Sport, La Liga TV's own, explaining how Spanish media has been covering the story and perhaps the shortfalls of the Spanish media in terms of how they are addressing the elephant in the room, which is that Vinicius Jr. was a victim of racial abuse. Mark Schwarzer, you have lived in Spain. You have experienced the culture. You are in amongst those headlines and the media of how this has been covered. Give us your thoughts on what has been an extraordinary few days for La Liga and an extraordinary few days for Spain as a nation.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of finger pointing. A lot of people, there seems to be a sense of embarrassment, almost a sense of that can't be true. We saw Carlo Ancelotti come out today as well in the press and say that this is not an issue that you have in England. It's an issue that is rife here in Spain. The way that people speak to you, the way that they criticize you at a football pitch, for some reason it's allowed and accepted. There were three arrests of two guys, three guys in Valencia who held an effigy of Vinicius Jr., which dates back a couple of months ago, that they finally made the arrest today. I don't know if that's a coincidence or not, but all of a sudden there were three people who were arrested today. So there seems to be some movement, and we'll see how far it goes. But there is a lot of talk around the clock about this problem within Spanish football.
Could it be that the players will vote with their feet? I mean, if you were Jude Bellingham or Kylian Mbappe seeing scenes like this, one of the best players in the world, Vinicius Jr., receiving this sort of abuse, and then when they weigh up an offer from a Real Madrid to think, well, do I want to go and play in this environment?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, you're not going to want to go. Why would you? And if, when you're seeing, I mean, this is like Schwartz just talked about, the way he's become a victim when he has been the victim himself, and they're saying that Vinicius Jr. is the one that's reacted in an inappropriate way. It's an absolute disgrace. Uneducated people, sadly, I think it's absolutely disgusting. So that would definitely put you off wanting to go and sign for that football club, no doubt about it. And like you say, I think the only way that they can try and get some momentum to bring the issue to the forefront, because the papers don't seem to be doing anything over there, Swarty, about it, neither the media don't seem to be highlighting it. I think the players, at some point, you've just got to say enough is enough and just down tools, and then that something has got to be done. It's almost like an in-house protest from every footballer, and you make it a unified stance.
You know, somebody's got to, get into a dialogue, and somebody's got to raise their hands and actually take responsibility for this. And I feel that's a little bit of the issue. As you said, the media is not doing enough. The clubs are not doing enough. La Liga is not doing enough. And everyone needs to be on the same page to create the right culture around games and punish the people that obviously step out of line.
It is a tough situation, and we will keep an eye on it. Keep following Optus Sport, because, of course, La Liga TV and the journalists on the ground from La Liga TV will continue to report on this. One other matter that relates to Real Madrid is, of course, the future of Carlo Ancelotti. Real Madrid, now out of the Champions League, cannot win the league. They won the Copa del Rey, so they did get a trophy. Will it be Ancelotti's final season, though? It seems as though no party between Ancelotti, Real Madrid, or the Brazil national team want to be the first to act and actually commit to making a move to the other. Thomas Sorensen, is someone going to blink first, or is Carlo Ancelotti just going to come back and manage Real Madrid next season because the Brazil national team never actually slapped an offer in front of him?
You know what? After the season Real Madrid has had, there's always going to be speculation and... you know, will he stay? You know, I actually think he will. I think he will stay at Real Madrid for next season. Yes, the Brazilian job is tempting, but they tend to want, though, a Brazilian coach, and I think the public in Brazil would want that as well. They're very proud, obviously, in and around their national team, and even though with a manager like Ancelotti and the name and the CV he has, I think it would take a lot to bring him to Brazil. So now, for me, I think he'll stay at Real Madrid, despite the, you know, bad season they've had on their normal standards.
Tommy, what a lovely problem to have. Do you want to coach Real Madrid or Brazil national team? Do you know what I mean? Like, we're talking the elitist of the elitist, do you know what I mean? And I can imagine, because I do believe Ancelotti's son is there with him as well, isn't it? Is that right? Is that you, one of the analysis staff? I mean, what a relationship that is as well. He's just learning off one of the greatest of all time, do you know what I mean? So no doubt about it, he's going to have some great, great future. But I think Tommy's right. I think we will see Ancelotti at Madrid, and he'll want to have another crack next season to see what he can do to try and get Real Madrid back to the top of the Liga.
How unusual that would be if Ancelotti stayed on as manager, considering he's only won the Copa del Rey. I mean, how many managers of Real Madrid would stay on, would they keep on as a manager after only winning the Copa del Rey? So, I mean, I know it's Carlo Ancelotti, I know he's obviously an absolute legend, but it's still intriguing to see that a club like Real Madrid potentially will keep someone who's only produced the Copa del Rey this season.
Actually, Schwartzy, it did not even cross my mind that Real Madrid might make this easy for Brazil by sacking Ancelotti. Are you suggesting that they might be the ones to sack him because his performance just hasn't been good enough, finishing so far behind Barcelona and getting knocked out in the semi-final of the Champions League?
I think if you look historically with Real Madrid, winning just the Copa del Rey, and same as Barcelona, winning just the Copa del Rey and, you know, being completely outclassed in the Champions League. I mean, yes, it is a semi-final, but still, we're talking about Real Madrid, right? And we're talking about, say, Barcelona. If we're going to talk about the two of them, and being so far behind Barcelona in La Liga, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they did. They probably won't. But if you said to me tomorrow, Carlo Ancelotti's gone, I'd be like, yeah, okay. Considering the season he's had, and how far off they are, and it may be a time of change, right? Players leaving, older players, Benzema's coming towards the end, Cruz. You know, Modric, you know, all of a sudden after losing to Man City in the semi-final of the Champions League, they all started talking about how old this team is and how much of an overhaul it needs.
And there he is, Gegenpod listeners. Mark Schwartz, the manager slayer, is back. That's the kind of content we want off the big man. He's just called out Ancelotti. Me and Tommy have just praised him up. Well done. But it's a very, very well-made point.
Yeah, I think that the point he puts out with a rebuild, you know, again, it did look old, that midfield. You know, we were praising them last year, but now against Man City, they looked outclassed, and it raises a lot of questions. And then you obviously have to raise: is Ancelotti the right man to, you know, to build a new team, or, you know, are they going to play these players for another year? You know, so it's an interesting time for Real Madrid for sure.
Let's move on to the WSL, because Mark Schwartzer, you were there watching Chelsea go top of the league by beating Arsenal. They take a 2-point lead into the final day of the season. Incredibly, it could be either Australians in dreamland or Australians disaster, because If Reading was to upset Chelsea, they could potentially relegate two Aussies at Leicester, in addition to costing Sam Kerr the title and allowing Manchester United to go top of the league. So I think Australia versus Reading this weekend is the story. Is it as simple as Chelsea get the job done in the final game, close the season out, and relegate Reading in doing so?
Look, I think the gap between the top sort of teams in the WSL, Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal, Man City, Aston Villa to Reading, is so enormous. It would have to be a monumental slip up for Chelsea. Reading would have to find something from somewhere which they've never ever done before. Chelsea would have to have such a bad day at the office to lose the game. I can't see it. I just can't see it being possible. I think Chelsea will win the game and win the game comfortably. Their biggest test was last weekend against Arsenal. They needed to get it over the line against Arsenal. They did. I mean, first half performance was very, very good. Second half, they were lucky. I think the introduction of Steph Catley down the left-hand side, link-up play with Caitlin Ford was excellent. And Steph Catley made all the difference in that second half. And obviously, Arsenal had a penalty. Katie McCabe puts the ball wide. They should have got themselves back in the game. Had they gotten that penalty, had they scored that penalty, then I think the game would have been completely different, because Chelsea did look a little bit rocked at that stage and vulnerable. But for they rode their luck, got away with it, and in the end, got the 3 points and the vital 3 points. Having spoken to Sam Kerr after the game, she talked about it herself, saying she thought that that was their best 45 minutes performance in that first half, and it was also one of the toughest games they've had all season. I think it's a combination of what was at stake, the magnitude of the game, how long the season's been for them. I think that the overall quality at Chelsea is just going to be too great. And they're going to win the WSL this weekend.
And Thomas, as far as the WSL is concerned, Manchester City, it looks like they're going to finish fourth, miss out on the Women's Champions League, which is big for a club like them, but they have renewed their coach. So are they treading water a little bit, or do you expect them to load up and have a big off-season to try and return to the title picture in a serious way?
If you know the City Group, I'm sure they'll reassess this and try to push on. You know, I think they had a big task. You know, they lost Lucy Bronze, Stanway and Kira Walsh in the summer. Kadisha Shaw has obviously been monumental for them, but I think overall, you know, they were in for a bit of a fight for competing with Chelsea and obviously Man United, who loaded up with talent. So I'm sure, you know, they'll see the challenge for next year, and I like that they've kept Gareth Taylor. I think he's actually done a good job. I like the way they play, they've got some good players there, and if they can add, you know, one or two, I think they'll be competing next year. So it's great to see that there's no panic and they keep the continuation going into next season.
All right. Well, you can see all of the WSL, the final day, all games simultaneous at a pretty viewer-friendly time as well, 11:30 p.m. on Saturday night. So stay up for that one if you want. All right. Let's go to what is normally dubbed the most lucrative game in world football. It is the Championship playoff to get into the Premier League, Coventry versus Luton. That also happens on Saturday night into Sunday morning. Michael Bridges, we'll start with you. Who do you want to win and who do you think will win?
Yes, Theo, a massive, massive game like you've just mentioned, and it's incredible to think the two teams I got through. Luton Town knocking out Sunderland, the bully boy tactics, the aerial presence from set players got them there, and it was justified. You know, they finished with 80 points as opposed to Sunderland's 69 points. So they get themselves there. But a team that haven't got a stadium geared up for the Premier League, it's absolutely incredible. And then a team under the guidance of Mark Robbins, the ex-Manchester United player, at Coventry with a smaller budget and, you know, ground problems sharing this season, pitch problems, and they found themselves going to the final at Wembley. It's going to be absolutely incredible. Who do I think will win? I'm going to take Coventry in this one. I think they have got a nicer playing style, and the reason I want to see them there is because I don't fancy travelling to Luton Town next season if I'm going to be doing any core comms work, because the gantry looks absolutely horrendous, or I'll be sitting in somebody's backyard or front living room doing it from there. So that's why I want Coventry to go up, but it's going to be an incredible game. There's a lot of money at stake, and I'll take Coventry to win this one.
It's amazing because Bridgie, you said before we started recording, oh, I cop it on the Gegenpod from fan bases. I won't say which fan base, but you were getting grief on social media. And here you go. You've just thrown Luton Town onto the train tracks, mate. Kenilworth Road, right under the bus. Come on.
I can't believe. You know, I thought Bridgie was the old school, you know, roll your sleeves up. And he's become a right softy. You know, now he's looking at stadiums and their facilities. Bloody hell. Like, what has the world come to?
What an egotistical footballer attitude to have at it.
Yeah. Oh, prawn sandwich. Proper prawn sandwich.
Yeah, Roy Keane would be hating me at this moment in time.
Same question. Who do you want to win and who do you think will win?
I'm distraught after Sunderland went out. I had hoped after that 2-1 win at the Stadium of Light that we were going to do it. But actually, I would go against Bridgie. I would love to see Luton. Rob Edwards there, my old teammate. I think he's done a great job. I would love to see him getting the accolades and get them to the Premier League. What a story. And it will be a story for whoever wins that final, because they've all come from, you know, I lived in and around Coventry, or not far from Coventry while I was at Stoke. And, you know, the horrors they've gone through and where the club was at just, you know, not many years ago to where they could potentially be next season is a fantastic story. So,
well, but, yeah, Luton, who I would like to win, I'd like to see Coventry back into the Premier League. And I think, look, they've got the stadium, got the history. Luton, look, would be an amazing fairy tale story. It'd be against all the odds. But I would prefer to see Coventry. But I actually think Luton will do it. I actually think Luton will get into the Premier League. So it's going to be one of those finals again where it's obviously everything's on the line and it's going to be so tense, so huge. And I can't wait for it.
And just to finish the Gegenpod today, of course, we've seen the announcement of the Socceroos playing against the team that knocked them out of the World Cup, Argentina. It will take place, all going to plan, in China. Now, we're just over 6 months away from the Asian Cup. So, Mark Schwarzer, I imagine we're going to get a team and a selection against an opponent of this quality far closer to what we might expect Graham Arnold's best 11 to look like at the Asian Cup. But what are your expectations and hopes for the rematch against the world champions?
Well, firstly, it's a shame it's not in Australia, or even in Argentina for that matter, for the boys to experience that. You know, to be in China is a bit of a disappointment in my personal opinion. But yeah, for the Socceroos to come up against the world champions, kind of a little bit of a rematch in some aspects. And it's going to be a game, yeah, definitely, whereby Graham Arnold has to go with his strongest side, because you don't want to go there with the you know, and not play your strongest side and potentially be outdone very, very easily by an incredibly talented side. So potentially also it will be a side that will be similar, if not the same, to the one that will play at the Asian Cup. But again, disappointed it's in China.
But can we just touch on the next 8 months of international football? Because obviously we got this game in June, then we got Australia against England at Wembley. The Socceroos go there. What a game that will be. And then you have the Women's World Cup in between, leading into the Asian Cup. So there'll be, you know, so much momentum and you know, a lot of it will be shown here and up to sport, especially the Women's World Cup. So, you know, fantastic 8 months.
Well, that brings us to the end of the Gegenpod this week. Everyone looking forward to the final day of the season. And I'm excited to mention that we will have an instant reaction podcast going up very shortly after all of those games finish on Monday morning, Australian Eastern Standard Time. Michael Bridges, we'll be trying to get hold of you in an airport lounge. So look forward to speaking to you then. And thanks for joining us on the Gegenpod.
Yeah, great to speak to everybody again. Hope you've enjoyed the Gegenpod. And it was great to see and listen to you, boys.
And Thomas Sorensen, you'll be pulling an all-nighter just like everyone else in Australia to enjoy the Premier League final day of the season. So catch up with you again soon.
It's going to be awesome. Can't wait for the tears from Bridgie over the phone. Don't know how he's going to cope with that in a lounge, but we'll get to that when we get to that next week.
And Mark Schwarzer, thanks for your company as well.
Well, I'm just going to continue along the same vein about hammering Bridgie, and I'll be looking forward to hearing from Bridgie's experiences at the job centre on Monday morning when Leeds has been relegated to the Championship.
Honestly, you lads, you know, if I had feelings and I wasn't thick-skinned, that would hurt.
Yes, a big thanks to Mark Schwarzer, Thomas Sorensen and Michael Bridges. There are still a couple of Premier League games before the final day of the season, with Brighton playing Manchester City on Thursday morning at 5 a.m. and Manchester United playing Chelsea on Friday morning at 5 a.m, both times Australian Eastern Standard Time. Then from 1 a.m. on Monday, it's all 10 games kicking off simultaneously to sort out the relegation battle and all the final standings. La Liga is currently in the middle of a full midweek round, so make sure to check out the Optus Sport website and app for all the fixture details. The WSL concludes on Saturday night with Chelsea away at Reading. All six games kick off simultaneously at 11:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, but Chelsea against Reading is the one you want for both the title and also the relegation battle that needs to be sorted out. And the J-League and K-League continue on Optus Sport. Make sure to jump on the Optus Sport website or app for broadcast details. Don't forget, we will have a double Gegenpod next week, so make sure to hit subscribe and rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. We'll have an instant reaction pod on Monday morning Australian Eastern Standard Time after that final round of Premier League fixtures, and then we'll be back with our regular Gegenpod midweek as well. I've been your host, Teo Pelizzeri. Thanks for listening to the Optus Sport Football Podcast. This was the Gegenpod.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.